Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, look at this. Welcome back. It's a great Sunday morning here along the Gulf Coast. This week, it occurred to me that Mobile, where I happen to be, is a city of dragonflies. Just the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I hope you saw some dragonflies in your yard. I certainly saw them in my yard. It was absolutely amazing. Just thousands and thousands and thousands of dragonflies. I still can't get over it. I talked about it last week. It was still there this week. And that air, the air, how do we describe it? I have been at pains to describe the air, the feeling that I got. It was like warm milk. Warm milk. If you've ever had milk fresh from the cow, about that temperature, maybe just a little warmer, was the air was like that. And you know, you'd think, gosh, well, this is strange. This is weird. It's not, but you know, in its own way, it was kind of like, it was kind of like somebody pulling a silk scarf across your skin. It was just, well, if I can say it, sensual. It was just an amazing thing being on the Gulf Coast this past week. It's this, it's Gulf summer along the Gulf Coast. What a great time. Rainfall's with, it's going to be extremely hot now, and this is one of those, it's going to be hot because the temperature is going to be high, but also because that humidity and that silkiness is going to be part of the air. And that makes it much warmer than usual. It's something we go through occasionally. It's not often. It's rare that temperatures are going to get as high. Just the absolute temperature, 94, 95 degrees, rare that that would happen. In Mobile, it usually hits 90 and then kind of stops. But it's going to be hot. The humidity is going to be high. Something to think about. But the other thing I want to talk about today, and the big thing I really want to talk about, we've been talking about this before. You know, it's very important that we get down to the basics of what makes things grow. Because no matter what you imagine you're going to grow, whether it's hemp or food or azaleas or roses, you've got to understand all of these things that go into making plants grow. And I think sometimes we just forget the basics. And so last week, you remember what I said last week? And I said, what are the most important things that your soil needs? The things without which, just assuming you got some soil particles out there somewhere, sand or clay or silt, what are the things that sand or clay or silt needs first and foremost, without which nothing else matters? Well, they're the two most important ingredients, and you need to remember this because it's the thing people forget. Water is the first. Yeah, that's pretty important. You kind of got that. You don't sometimes have the water in the right place. Sometimes you put the water on the plant. But it's the water in the roots. You don't put it on the leaves. You put it in the roots. And the roots are well below ground, 3 to 6 inches below ground. And that's where the water needs to be. So when you water, you stick your finger in there and you make sure that it's getting down 3 to 6 inches. But here's the other thing. It's not just water. It's oxygen. Oxygen. This is not the way you learned it in grammar school, I know, but this is the way the world works. Oxygen is incredibly important for plants. And we're taught that plants take in carbon dioxide and release oxygen. That's true. that's what happens around the leaves. That's what happens up in the leaf part. And there's, it's not quite that simple up there either, because the plant needs oxygen up there around the leaves as well. But here's the key. The roots need oxygen. And so does everything else that's happening in the soil, which we'll going to talk about today. So oxygen becomes this really important thing. And here's the problem with the Gulf Coast. Oxygen is hard to obtain in the soil on the Gulf Coast. And that's because our soils tend to compact very easily and they exclude oxygen. And it's because it rains so much that water often fills up the spaces that where oxygen needs to be. Big problem. We are often oxygen deficient. That is the big, not nitrogen. It's not nitrogen that is our big deficiency problem. It's not something you buy in a bag. It's the simple thing called oxygen. And that's where we really need to work on our plants. Somebody asked last week, and let me just clarify. Roots need oxygen because oxygen is a, how do I describe it? It's a catalyst. It's the thing that roots need in order to break molecules down and to extract energy from those molecules. Without oxygen, you know, oxygen causes rust. You ever notice that? That's what oxygen is about. Oxygen and moisture. But basically, it's the oxygenization of metal that causes rust. The same thing happens in lots of different kinds of things. Oxygen breaks things down. We've learned to adapt to that, and we've learned to use oxygen in our own bodies to help break down. It's how we get energy in our own bodies, is to use oxygen to get that, to help us break molecules apart to get energy. Same thing happens in plant roots. Can I just say that? So you gotta have this oxygen there. And in the South, and particularly in places like the Gulf Coast, oxygen is very difficult in soils. And the biggest problems you have in your soils, I guarantee it, it ain't pH. It ain't something you buy in a bag. It's not lime. It's not fertilizer. It's lack of oxygen. So there's a lot of hocus pocus about that. And we talked about it. You know, there's a lot of ways people perceive that you can add oxygen to the soil. Most of them don't work. Only the old-fashioned way really works. And the old-fashioned way of adding oxygen to the soil is the way that oxygen has been added to the soil since we started having roots in the ground, since we started having forests, since we started having prairies, since we started having savannas and meadows and pine trees and oak trees. From the very start, oxygen was added to the soil in one very important way, and that's by organic matter in various forms, carbon in various forms, keeping, churning the soil, changing the way the soil is formed, so that the particles don't stay so tightly, so don't compact, don't get too close together, and don't stay too far apart. In a lot of our soils, you know, what happens is it rains all the time, and it just leaches everything out of the soil. And then the soil compacts and gets dense, no oxygen, no water. It's crazy what happens. Organic matter, leaves, twigs, wood, little pieces of insects, all of these things get into the soil, roots, they break down slowly and form organic matter. That's what does it. But there's another important ingredient. So now we're going to take another step today. We needed the oxygen, we needed the water, we needed the organic matter. But what is it that makes the organic matter work? And that's soil creatures. And we're going to try to get to this soil creature thing today. We're going to talk a little bit more about soil creatures. And it's not just earthworms. It's a whole host of things in the soil that make a difference in whether your plant lives or dies and how much oxygen is available to your plants. We're going to talk about that when we come back this morning. So listen up. I want you to understand this. I don't want you to have to. I want you to be able to answer your own questions about what's happening in your garden. That's really important. So we're going to talk about that. But what is it that really makes your garden work? Oxygen, water, organic matter, soil creatures. We're coming back. Great music from the Gulf Coast, Bamboula.
Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, we're back. Listen, so I think I've started something. I hope so. I think I've started something. And Tim, he's got a great question here. And we'll get to it. Craig called in. He's got a question about figs and oaks, and I want to get to it. But listen, I want to do this. Craig, hold on for just a second. Hold on for me now. Because I want to talk about this. Tim asked this question because he heard me yammering this last 15 minutes about how oxygen is very important to the soil, as we did last week. And then we talked about organic matter is very important. And then I said we're going to talk about soil creatures and how important they are. But Tim says, look, you say oxygen is such a big deal, but you tell me not to till the soil. Are you crazy? Well, probably. But I know a bit about soil. I've learned a bit about soil, both mostly the hard way, by digging it, tilling it too much, creating problems, making the soil worse. I've seen it happen over and over. Not just in my own garden, but actually working for farmers. So could see it happen. Back when I was younger, I certainly see it in forests all the time. Here's the thing. Soils need oxygen, but tilling reduces the amount of oxygen available in the soil. Briefly, Tim, and briefly those of you who still think that tilling's going to help you. For about a week or two, maybe 3 weeks, you'll increase the level of oxygen in that soil by fluffing it up, destroying all of the connections between soil particles, turning them into flour. But as soon as it rains, one, two, or three times, that soil is compacted again. It comes back together once you till it in a much tighter way than it was before you tilled it. I'm going to tell you why. It's because you destroyed all of the careful structure that's made by soil creatures and by roots that are using that organic matter to build your soil. Listen, this is what topsoil is. It's not just sand or clay or silt. It's the structure that is created by all of these soil creatures, and there are thousands of them, unbelievable numbers of them working in your soil. I'm not talking about there are thousands of creatures. There are thousands of different kinds of creatures, different species like giraffes and elephants and tigers and all in your soil, all working to create that topsoil that is what plants love to grow in. This is very important to understand. So when you till, you may put those, you may put certain of those little soil creatures into overdrive. They will destroy all of those bonds, all of that structure. They'll just eat it and tear it apart. Not only did your tiller do it, but they did it too. And your soil collapses. So you have less oxygen after you till. I just want to tell you this. So we got to talk about, what do you do? Well, it's pretty simple. You kind of think about how soils have been made for a long time. And we're going to get back to that. So I want you to hold on. But Craig's got some important questions, and I want Craig to be able to ask him. Tim, are you with me? You with me, Tim? Good. Craig, you there?
I'm right here, friend.
Tell me what's up. I'm good.
First part of the question is, I planted a fig tree about 3 or 4 years ago in the front yard, and it's doing very well. I haven't gotten a fig yet because the birds get them.
Yeah.
But it's getting taller and taller and taller and wider and wider and wider, and I need to know how to trim it up. And the other question,
Craig, great
question.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Let's take them one at a time, so we don't get lost. Yes. So let's, because I have a hard time remembering too many questions at one time. So hold on to the second one. So let's go to the fig, because that's a good one, and you got it right. So there are two ways to make sure that you get figs. The first way is to always make sure that your fig remains a bush. Anybody who harvests figs, seriously, who's really serious about figs, and who's serious about it commercially, they're always keeping those figs as bushes. They never let them become trees. Once they become trees, it's impossible. I mean, it's so hard. And I've tried. Please believe me. It's just impossible to gather all the figs. You won't do it. It's just difficult. And you put it right where the birds can get it easily, but you can't get it. So you want to keep it as a bush. We're going to talk about that. The second thing is, what do you do about the birds that are eating the figs off your bush? Just one quick and easy thing. Birds hunt by sight. They don't, and the birds that are eating fruit, they don't eat that fruit at night. Most of the birds that are in our yards, the mockingbirds, they're all going to eat it during the day. So if you pick the figs first thing in the morning, the birds will get a few, but you're going to get most of them. So pick them in the mornings. Don't wait till afternoon. Don't wait till later in the day. Get out as early as you can, because once the day lights up and it's been up for a while, the birds have had their pick and there's not much left. So picking early in the morning, that's the key to figs. That's the first thing. And if you do that, you don't need any netting or anything else. You'll get most of the figs. But you need to prune that fig, and you've got it right. At this point, you know, you can actually, I think it's fine to prune this time of year. And the key to pruning, and you'll also have to prune again in February, because figs grow like crazy here when they're happy. And so they get big a lot. What you want is a fig bush that you don't have to stand on a ladder to reach any of the limbs. So that means you want most of the limbs to be horizontal, and you want most of the trunks to be relatively small. So each year, Craig, each year we go in and we take out two or three of the fattest trunks. It's that simple. So, and you know, if it's young, you just cut them right to the bottom. Boom. And leave the other trunks to.
So we're going to have one main trunk, and all the rest are going to get slowly chewed off.
No. So let's say if it's a very young fig, a typical fig that's about 4 or 5 years old will have about 5 or 6 sprouts coming from the base, right? Is yours looking that way?
I think it's a little bit up from the trunk. Yeah, the ground only has one.
Okay, well, then you're okay. So you'll be seeing more of those sprouts as time goes on. At
coming
this point, then, if coming up from the ground. and that's what you want to encourage. So if you don't have any sprouts from the ground right now, what I would do is I would simply take the central trunk and cut it off about as high as you can reach. Just cut it off right there, right now. Okay?
I got you.
And that's going to encourage some sprouting at the base. This spring, come back and see if you don't have some sprouts beginning to develop, or next February.
Yes, sir.
And then if you've got four or five smaller sprouts, take out that central one. If you don't, you're going to have to keep working the sprouts that are coming from that central trunk. Here's what I do. Let me tell you. So that's the first thing. We really want to make sure we encourage the young sprouts, the one-year-old sprouts. They're the best ones for producing figs from a lot of perspectives. We want to encourage those 1- and 2-year-old sprouts. We want to get rid of the 3-year-olds and the 4-year-olds and the 5-year-olds because they get too big. And they cease to be as productive in the end, too. So we want to encourage young sprouts, and that's what I mean by every year cutting back a few at the base. The other thing I do with my fig is that when I get, even if it's a young sprout, it may get taller than I do. So in the spring, in February, which is when our spring starts, about between February 15th and February 30th, if I've got a sprout that's, say, a little fatter than my thumb, but it stands up, but it's taller than I am, by 4 or 5 feet, I'll just take it and I will cut it off right about chest height. Just cut it off.
And these are the ones cut it off up from the ground.
Up from the ground or from the trunk of the fig. Just cut it off. You don't want anything to be taller than your neck, basically.
Okay.
So you can just cut those off, and they will all begin to branch horizontally. You see what I'm saying? They'll put out branches to the side.
Yes,
and
sir.
Those horizontal branches are much easier to pick. Craig,
okay. We
got to take a break, but I'm going to be right back. You get to ask me more questions about figs, and then we're going to talk about your oaks, okay?
I'll stay.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue tick hound dog Giddy, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played. Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian. Just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Craig, we talked about this fig tree and what we're trying to accomplish with it, and that's to get the figs down to where we can pick them easier than the birds.
Yes,
and the way to do that is to encourage the younger sprouts, and then in February we want to cut those younger sprouts so that they produce horizontal branches. Is what I'm telling you making a lot of sense?
Sort of. I'd like to visualize it better.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut the top of the tree off. I'm going to cut some of the branches off down at the bottom.
No. Don't cut the ones off at the bottom. The ones at the bottom are the one you want.
So you want to make sure.
Typically, and I think you'll probably find that if your fig is three years old, you're going to get lots of sprouts from the base. I mean, and by that I mean it's going to come up from the ground, not even from the trunk, but from the ground surrounding that, from the crown surrounding it. And these will be young sprouts. Those are the ones you want to encourage. They're the ones that come right up from the ground. And then when that starts happening, when you've got 5 or 6 or 7 of those young sprouts coming up from the ground, take that big fat trunk and cut it off to the ground. You see what I'm saying?
The main trunk?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the way. Well, it's the way people have been doing it for a long time.
I believe.
And if you... Yeah, it works, and it really works. And it sprouts, and so it puts all those young sprouts up from the side. And it's, don't cut the ones, don't cut the young ones coming up from the ground in the case of a fig. Now, if you were doing a tree, if you wanted a tree, you'd do just the opposite.
Right, right.
Right? You'd get rid of all those sprouts around the base, and you'd want that central one to grow up. But you don't want a tree. You want a bush.
So this is going to be like a crepe myrtle where I have numerous stalks at the bottom.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And you know what? It's I tell people in the one of the traditions with crepe myrtles that you don't see, you never saw much around the Gulf Coast, but I'd see it a lot in the mountains. People would turn their crepe myrtles into shrubs every year. Because they sprout so prolifically, and so what they would do is they would cut that main trunk down to the ground and let those young sprouts come up, and it would be a crepe myrtle shrub. And the truth is that actually looks better than a lot of the crepe myrtle cutting that we see. But that's what you're doing with the fig, and it'll look great. It's going to grow great as soon as you get those sprouts around the base. So there it is. That's cut that main. So right now, take that main trunk. Go ahead and cut it off. You know, cut it off about just if you've got a ring of branches coming out, say about 2 feet above the ground.
Yes.
Cut off everything above that. Just cut it off. Get it out of there.
How low am I cutting this main trunk? Up to my neck height? You know, 5 feet up in the air or so?
Well, this year we're going to cut it down to where it's just above that first ring of branches coming out of the ground.
Okay. So I'm going to encourage the growth of the ring of branches.
You want the growth at the bottom, not at the top.
All right. I'm following you now.
And listen. You're going to come back to me this spring. You're going to come back in February, February 15th. You call me back, and we're going to walk you through what that plant looks like. We're going to walk through how to figure it out. Okay, good?
Yes, sir.
Now, tell me about these oaks.
What I'm looking for is a tree in Midtown I can plant between the sidewalk and the street. So I need a little tree, like a crepe myrtle, like a scrub oak, you know, a scrub oak. Because the power lines are right there, right above it, and the power company's going to come by and cut it to pieces. So I can't get a tree of any size. I need something small, you know. And what do you recommend?
Boy, there's a lot of them, Arthur. And how low are the power lines? Do you know?
25 feet or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, if they're 25 feet, you got lots of choices. And, you know, it's if it's in that kind of really difficult area, there are a lot of great, you know, I hate the term scrub oak because it's sort of like my dad calling his horses Joe Billy. And Dad said, go feed Joe Billy. And I said, which Joe Billy is he talking about this time?
Yeah, I know what you mean. These are not the big, pretty, magnificent oaks or water oaks or live oaks.
Yeah.
They're little scrub oaks that never get any size. And they're the ones that the city mandates companies plant.
So we have a list. We have a list of good small oaks, and actually they can be very pretty, and quite beautiful. The trouble is, I don't know if you're going to be able to find them easily. So you're going to give up if I tell you to plant one of the scrub oaks, one of the small oaks.
Okay, so what do you recommend?
Let me not put you on the scrub oaks, and let me give you something that you can run with. I would love it if you could find some of these smaller oaks. It's what we need to do. There's one that's turquoise. It's absolutely beautiful. Quercus incana, the blue jack oak would be great. Black jack oak would be great. The trouble is you're not going to be able to.
Online somewhere?
If you want to go. Man, you're intrepid. This is great. So I'm going to tell you where to go, what to do. What you want to look for is blue jack oak. Blue jack oak. It is a beautiful oak. You'll love it. Blue jack. The leaves are turquoise. It's absolutely stunning. I can give you a bunch of names, but let's just go with Blue Jack Oak. It doesn't get that big. It'd be easy to maintain at 25 feet. And you can find it. I think you can find it at a place called Superior Trees.
Yes, sir.
So you might look Superior Trees and see if they don't have Blue Jack Oak. But Blue Jack Oak, it is a great and beautiful oak. It would be a great oak for that place.
Okay. Any other type of tree you would think of?
Yeah, you know, if you're having a hard time finding Blue Jack Oak for a dry spot like that, that's you could go with Chase Tree, Chaste, Chaste Tree. It's a very beautiful tree that does really well in a situation like that. You can do like I do, which is to grow hollies. And there are a lot of beautiful hollies. My favorite are, there's a holly called, as a matter of fact, I won't tell you why it's called this. It's called Goldfinch Holly. And it's a beautiful holly. It's a tree that gets about 15 feet tall. It's mm-hmm. full of gold berries in fall, without any leaves in fall. It's just, but it's nothing
don't,
but gold berries. Me. Absolutely beautiful.
Don't and it's spread it's, quite a bit.
No, goldfinch does not. It will stay exactly where it is. There are also some red hollies some red berried hollies that would be really good. So there's Chase Tree, the hollies. There's a lot of great hollies. In fact, if you can find Yopon Holly, it's a great one too. And, for that area. And then the oaks, I would recommend the Blue Jack Oak.
Okay. Sterile pear. I'd love to plant azaleas, but I don't think lawnmowers would allow it.
Plant an azalea for what now?
Just in that area.
Yeah, it sounds like it's probably not a great place for azaleas. It's probably going to be a little too dry. Yeah. Let's try the trees there. All right.
Think of any other trees. Squeak it out.
I will do it. Craig, good to talk to you.
I'll be here. Thank you, sir.
All right. Hey, we got a lot of texters who've got some questions. I'm ready with the answers, but we got a lot of phone callers too. So let me get to the phones real quick. Paul, I'm listening.
Hey,
what's up?
Good morning again. Hi, Bill. How about fall garden, like pole beans, whatever, Kentucky Wonder, whatever, and also cucumbers. When could we plant those for the fall?
Yeah, you know, I think right now is the time to do it. So there's a bunch of them. Cucumbers for the fall is interesting. I haven't tried it before. I'm sure there are people who have. I think it probably could work very, very well. There's a cucumber I grew this year that was just incredibly prolific. It's called the lemon cucumber. You have to grow it on a trellis because it's big and it grows all over the trellis. But man, I think that could do very, very well for you this fall.
Lemon cucumber, and we could plant it. Pretty soon, you say?
I'd plant it right away.
Okay.
This is just about the time to do it. You may have a couple more weeks. I would say the same for beans. It's about the time for planting beans, but you don't want to plant a real long season bean. It would be fun. You could plant something like they plant in the mountains now, which is a great bean, the greasy cut shorts, which has a really funny name, but greasy beans are beans that have a slick surface. They're really very popular in the mountains. They're really great. They don't take a long season. They do well in cool weather because they're going to be producing in cool weather later in the year. So greasy cut shorts would be great. There's a bean that I've grown that I really like called Grandma Nellie's Mushroom Bean. It has a great flavor. Tastes like mushrooms. If you like it, it has a really great, great taste. That would do well. Or any other bean that doesn't take a long time to produce would be great. And I would go ahead and plant them right now, too. This might also be a really good time to plant bush beans. Normally, I don't recommend bush beans, but I think, you know, for fall, bush beans probably make a lot of sense. You got a couple of problems in fall, and that is you get bean beetles. They can be a real problem, and you just have to watch for them. Other than that, I think now's the time to plant.
Bill, I appreciate your input. You have a great day. God bless.
Always good to hear from you.
Thanks.
Hey, goodness gracious, do we not run out of time on this show? We got another break. I'm going to be right back. We're going to try to answer some questions. I think we got another caller. I know we've got a couple of texts we've got to get to. But we'll be back. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. I got lots of questions I got to answer, and then we're going to get back to this soil issues because Tim was asking all the right questions. If you need oxygen, why don't you till? And there's a good reason. There's a good reason you don't want to till because it decreases the amount of oxygen in the soil. And we're going to talk about why, and then we're going to talk about the right way to incorporate oxygen. It's a little bit of surprise, but it works, and it's a really easy way to do it. We're going to talk about that in the next hour because we had lots of questions this hour we had to get to. Listen, I wanted to answer. So I have a picture here of crepe myrtle leaves that look really, really ugly. They just look really ugly. Not crepe myrtle, excuse me, camellia leaves that look really ugly. And they've got yellow on the top and on the bottom it looks like they're covered with some kind of white flower. That's turning brown. Well, that white flower is tea scale. That's something we call tea scale. S-C-A-L-E. Tea is, camellias are members of the tea family. So it's called tea scale. Listen, tea scale is a common problem on camellias. It's a big issue. It's not that hard to deal with. It's pretty easy to deal with, but you gotta do it right. These are mostly non-moving insects that attach to the bottom of the leaves. They've got the youngsters move around a bit, but they're on the undersides of the leaves. You don't worry about what's on top. You worry about these bugs on the undersides of the leaves, and because people don't think about, well, gosh, they're on the undersides, I got to spray the top side. It doesn't work. Just spray the undersides of the leaves, and what you spray it with, this is the way to do it. You spray it with something that is very effective and very safe. It's called horticultural oil, and a lot of people were rolling their eyes because I used the term horticultural oil a lot because it works. It works. And I'm not the only person who recommends it. It's horticultural oil. There are a lot of names for the different types of horticultural oils out there. I think All Seasons is what everybody's selling now as the trade name that I see the most often. But you go in and you ask for a horticultural oil, a summer oil, some people call it a summer horticultural oil. And these oils you put in a little sprayer, a little pump-up sprayer. Don't get a little hand sprayer. It won't work. That has a little wand. You want a wand that's got a tip on it. I'll tell you why. Because you're gonna mix it up according to package directions. You're gonna spray it on the undersides of the leaves. So you gotta get that wand under the leaves. All around the plant at all the different levels where the leaves are. It, you know, takes you a little bit of practice to get it right, but not long. You'll catch on in about 1 minute. Just do that. Spray it under the leaves. That's what you want to do with that little wand. And it will be very effective. You won't get all of them, but you'll get probably, oh, I'm going to say, even if you do it badly, you're going to get 70% of them. Come back in about 10 days and spray again, and you will have that T scale. It'll be under control. It won't be a problem anymore. You may have to do that a little bit every year, once or twice a year. It's just one of those issues. Some plants have more T-scale than others. I think stress can sometimes be an issue. It's hard for me to tell. I'm not going to assume. So make sure your camellia is otherwise healthy. But the horticultural oil is the way to go. It's really simple, really fixes it. I've got another picture from... Ooh, Dan sent me a picture. He got tons of bananas. Great-looking bananas. The only thing, Dan, that you can and need to do at this point, and I'm not sure it's necessary, though a lot of people do it as a precaution, is to take off that red flower at the base. And I think there are several reasons for doing it. Just right below where the bananas are, cut the stalk off. Do it in old clothes because bananas leak this kind of sap that it will just turn everything, it stains everything it touches. Believe me, I got a bunch of old clothes that look like somebody threw paint at me. It's from the banana sap. Just cut it off and take that red flower off because it's adding to the weight and it will tug the plant over during storms. And in addition, it probably maybe saps a little bit of energy from the plant. But I think the big reason I would cut it off is because of the excess weight. And it's not doing anything anymore. It never really did. So that's the only thing you can do. And just wait. You got 90 days. We'll talk a little bit more about bananas next week. I got a caller. Charlie is still on. I'm listening. What's up?
Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, okay. Hey, I have some very, very sandy soil in Orange Beach, actually on Ono Island. And I want to plant a row of oleanders close to my property line. And I just wondered what I might have to do to juice up that sandy soil for oleanders.
Well, oleanders, fortunately, are from tropical areas, and so they're, interestingly enough, used to sandy soils. They do pretty well on sandy soils, better than most plants. So the only thing you need and the one thing that you can do and the one thing that can make a difference is to add organic matter on top of them. And right, that is right. The most important thing. So just take leaves, anything else you can find, make a bed of leaves about 4 feet wide and right, the length of the row where you got it. And I think they'll do about as well as any plant you could put there.
Well, I thought so. We have some in the front yard and, we have every couple of years, we have to cut them back. If not, they take over the whole. That's but right. Anyway, I appreciate it, and have a nice day.
You too. So, Charlie, we got any more callers left, Charlie? We're about run out of time, aren't we? Yes. So we're very close here to our time limit. I've got a picture of figs, and somebody sent me a picture of a fig with the word help. So I got to figure out what I'm going to help with. Not entirely clear, but the one thing I can tell you about that fig is you don't like that grass. Get that grass away from the fig as much as you can. Make sure it's getting plenty of sunlight. Looks like it's having to compete with the oak tree just a little bit. So there it is right there. If you've got more questions about those figs, I got the picture, but you might need to call me so we can discuss it in more detail. We're going to have to take a big break here. But when we come back, you can call and we can talk about your fig in particular. But I can tell you right away, pull that grass away as far away as you dare to pull it, 4 or 5 feet away from the fig. That's the first thing. And the other thing is I'm a little worried about sunlight because I'm seeing these big oak trees, and it may not be getting enough sunlight. It's probably also having to compete with those oaks. Rusty, I want to talk about these snake beans, man. I want to talk about these snake beans till the cows come home. They did great. So, and I really like them. They are weird. They are peculiar. They have a lot of attributes. And in fact, I arranged a few of them nicely on my porch to make sure that people don't steal things off my porch. I'll have to tell you about it. It's pretty cool. Snake beans, they are the coolest things in the whole world.
Right.
We're going to talk about them soon, and we're going to be back. Stay tuned.
Hide the deadly black tarantula.
Daylight come and we want more.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. Daylight come.
Six foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, bunch!